Hey, White Sox fans, it's Brett Ballantini here hosting Southside Sox podcast number 40, and we've got a treat because it's somewhat of an introductory podcast. We're going to talk White Sox 2021. We're going to get to that, but that's probably second half of the podcast because as much as I introduced or I'm going to introduce Sam Sherman coming up as his coverage begins soon as perhaps the top newcomer we had a year ago with Sports Illustrated, because he just came out of the gate gangbusters. I got to say, probably my early tab for newcomer, maybe even an early MVP here with Southside Sox for us. We're talking to him right here. It's Jeremy Carl. Guys come out of the gate gangbusters, regular coverage for us, dabbling in the six pack, not too daunted by that weird amalgam of crazy advanced stats. He's taking everything head on. And now he's even taking on a podcast. Jeremy, welcome. Very nice to have you.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it. I'm excited.
So, Jeremy, I don't think you have been, you haven't led me on quite the chase I had, say, with Colleen Sullivan. I think I was after for like a couple of years before she decided to finally come on. And now, you know, she's going bonkers with all her stuff. But we were in touch a while back, and when you did respond to me, pretty quickly signed up with us. So let's talk a little bit of maybe about what got you maybe into the Sox in the first place and a little bit of your background as a fan.
Yeah, I mean, I was just kind of grew up a Sox fan. My dad was a Sox fan his whole life. And so that's, you know, we went to Sox games as a kid or when I was a kid, and that's just kind of how I got into it. I mean, I remember, like, you know, we'd go to 4 or 5 games every year, and like when they had like Sundays was like the kids day or whatever, like dollar tickets or whatever, we'd always go to those, and it felt like Burley always pitched on those days. And I'd be like, man, I want to see like Freddie Garcia or something. You know, I don't want to see Mark Burley for like the 5th time this year. But now, of course, I'm like, man, I'd rather see Burley than, you know, almost anyone on this staff. So yeah.
So first favorite player, about when was maybe your first game?
It was like my, God, like 7th birthday. It was on my birthday, like 6th or 7th birthday. They played the Rays. They won 10-1. Sat in like the left field bleachers. And I was like, no, I never telling my like best friend. I was like, I'm going to catch a home run ball. And it just, you know, of course it doesn't never happen, you know. And I was just like, I was so disappointed. I really thought I was going to catch one, but no, yeah, it's like 7th birthday. And then from there on, we went to a lot more. And yeah, I mean, I grew up with like Burley and Canerico. Those are my two favorites. The two I grew like in AJ, AJ Pierzynski, those three were the ones I like really grew attached to growing up.
Well, it's interesting for me, my frame of reference with really the balance of the staff, which is significantly younger than me. I'm a guy who bridges. And of course we have a lot of readers and even a few staff members who even stretch back further than I do. But, you know, I'm talking to you, a guy whose frame of reference is only the new Sox Park, nothing old Comiskey. And the frame of reference too is then where did your fandom fall in relation then to 2005 in the World Series? And were there memories of that and what were they?
Yeah, definitely. I was a huge fan by 2005. I mean, I was a fan, you know, as soon as I knew what baseball was, I was a big White Sox fan. And I mean, I remember in school, it would be like, I was the only White Sox fan, me and this like one other girl in my elementary school were the only White Sox fans. Then like 2005 came around and all of a sudden everyone was a White Sox fan, you know? And I'm just like, and it pissed me off as like an elementary school kid. Cause I was just like, man, you guys aren't White Sox fans. I'm like, you've been making fun of me for all these years and now you're White Sox fans, you know? And it just like, it drove me crazy because then they won the World Series and it was just like this great moment for me. But then it's like, everyone's like, oh yeah, this is, you know,
yeah,
this is awesome.
That's like an offshoot of the folks who are like, man, I don't know if I want the team to be that good because geez, I can't just sit wherever I want or, yeah. You know, it's too crowded. What a hassle. And then you also had a brief moment of clarity growing up as a fan, because there was a time where, I don't know, there was some peer pressuring you into maybe being a Cubs fan. So you sort of had a moment to decide whether you were going to stay true to the White Sox. And it does seem like you came through on the right side of that.
Yeah, definitely. It's like first grade for like, I was just getting picked on so much and I just went home. I told my dad, just like, I remember so vividly, one of my most vivid like childhood memories. It's like, Dad, I think I'm going to be a Cubs fan now, you know? And he still tells this story. He's just like, Jeremy, you know, like, I don't think you should do that. You know, he's just like, if you want to be like, go ahead, but you should like sleep on it. And, you know, like, I don't think you'll like that. And he's like, and then I woke up the next morning and I'm like, Dad, I'm not going to be a Cubs fan. I'm just going to hate the Cubs. I don't like the Cubs. I like the White Sox.
So. Jeremy, your dad, Mr. Carl, you are my hero. Well done. Perfect response. Because really, what is the response? Even no matter how young you were, I know you're young and all that, but the response is, are you sure you want to do this? I mean, this is not the right move. And he can't say that to you, but he can say, really, seriously, you want to do this? You want to be that? Very wise. Very wise.
Yes.
Now, how much of the love of the White Sox and baseball in general then ended up informing sort of the things you ended up doing, perhaps in high school and certainly in college and perhaps even professionally doing some sports writing work, because that is some of your background as well. Is there a direct link there, or is it just sort of coincidental that, hey, I like sports and this is something I wanted to do?
No, it was, that's 100%. I mean, growing up, like, my main team was the Bulls. My family had season tickets to the Bulls. So I went to like 20 games every year, you know. And so that was like my team, but I loved the White Sox. You know, they were right there. And I have other teams that I like too, but now the White Sox are like my number one team. And 100%. I mean, when I was little, I wanted to be like the next Allen Iverson. You know, I was like the shortest kid on my team, but I was like, you know, I can be in the NBA one day. And then when I figured out that wouldn't happen, I was like, maybe coaching or like general manager would be cool. But then I was like, once I got to like late high school, I was like, you know, I know a lot about sports, or I think I do, and I have a passion for it. So this is kind of, you know, I don't know what else I would have really done. So I was like, I'll just try it, you know. Got into sports journalism for the past like 3 years, wrote for paper in South Dakota, covered some high school sports, some NAIA sports, a little Division One. And, you know, that was a blast, you know. So, yeah, that definitely correlated directly to it.
So to insert here, as we continue talking about this, this is, friends, readers, watchers, listeners, this is confirmation that Dakotas do exist. They weren't just an invention made by the Republicans to, like, get an extra couple. Oh, wait, actually, it was an invention by the Republicans to get a couple more seats in Congress. But, yes. Still, you're speaking to us from South Dakota.
I am. Yeah, I didn't believe it either before I came. I really had to think about it. It was a very small town. You know, it's one of actually the bigger, it's like ninth biggest town, you know, in South Dakota, Mitchell. And it's like, God, 30,000 maybe at most, you know. And it's just, but then everyone like around the smaller towns, you know, they're like, oh man, you're so lucky to live in Mitchell. You have a Walmart and stuff, you know. I'm just like, man, where I'm from, you know. It's like, you know, we have like the 5 Walmarts within like 10 minutes, you know? So it was a big change. Still is a big change.
Now, you know, I'm not going to try to make you envious, but certainly when I got into sports writing, what I first covered was the NBA and got to sit down with Allen Iverson, a lot of Pat Croce was for some reason took a liking to me. So we had a lot of discussions. Of course, he's quite a trip and a huge, huge Iverson guy, but unfortunately only began covering AJ or AM after Michael. So you know, in one way it made it really easy to get like courtside press seats, because I'm guessing in my position I was going to be way up in the rafters if it was during that time. But I guess it made for a bigger thrill because you were there right on the court. Now you were watching Dalibor Bagaric and Cornell David, but you know, you got to see the good guys on the other team. So
yeah, those were rough years.
Oh my God. It was sort of nice to be able to transition from fan. Cause obviously I grew up, you know, just like you, you know, Sox were probably always the first, but Bulls really were right there. Geez, Artis and Reggie Theus, those are my guys. And Chicago Stadium. And it made it easier. You didn't have to be tempted to cheer for Press Row when it was Fred Hoiberg, and briefly Brent Berry. But it was, hey, got me here, which I'm not really sure, Jeremy, is that a good thing or a bad thing? But here we're talking, and for now, it's definitely a good thing. So a definite connection makes sense. and any hesitation in deciding to want to sort of branch out and actually maybe covering the White Sox, you know, in as much as it is with us in Southside Sox, because you certainly have jumped in with both feet, or is it something that just you figured maybe all along might be a lot of fun to do?
Yeah, I mean, I've read this site for I mean, since you've taken over, especially, I've been reading it. I like the stuff you guys do and or that we do now. And I think, you know, it was an opportunity I felt that, you know, a little different than when I did previously for the past couple of years, but one that, you know, I blogged a little in college while I was also freelancing in college. And so I kind of wanted to get back into that realm just to see kind of, you know, see it through again. And I like blogging. I like kind of the online presence more. So yeah, it was an easy decision, especially, you know, I mean, watch all the games and stuff. So it's that makes it a lot easier too. Might as well write about what you're watching, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, for some, and I might include myself in that, I'm not sure that I'm necessarily I'm tuned into every inning unless I'm assigned, or maybe unless I'm running a White Sox site. So, you know, for some of us, it might actually be an adjustment. You know, for others, it's like, yeah, I'm watching the games anyway. And it doesn't mean you're supposed to like take on as you have like doubleheader or 2 6-packs or whatever. I mean, you know, God bless the energy, and you're kicking ass for us, and I really, really do appreciate it. But yeah, I mean, it's nice if it's sort of like, well, yeah, okay, I'm watching the game. And you know, there's certainly that sweet spot. Like, let's say the Bulls championship runs, like, yeah, I'm watching every minute. Yeah, how much harder would it be just, you know, to keep the notebook going while I'm watching this awesomeness? And you know, hopefully that's what we got, you know, with the White Sox now. And we're going to get to the White Sox now, the 500 White Sox here early in the season, right after we take a quick break. We're going to be right back. And again, if you're watching, it's just a real brief pause. Shut those eyes for just a second. We'll be back before you know it. Hey, White Sox fans, we are back. I'm Brett Valentini at Southside Sox Podcast number 40. With me, terrific, terrific newcomer for us at Southside Sox. It's Jeremy Carl. First half, we discussed maybe a little bit of what got him to Southside Sox and his White Sox fandom. And now we're going to drill deep, because Jeremy has been immersed in inning to inning as much as probably anybody has been on our site in terms of his coverage so far. So I might even be just deferring to him as the expert, because I'm just drive-by and with this team right now. But 9-9, but it's a deceptive 9-9, and I think there's no doubt, looking at the numbers below the 9-9, this is a much stronger team than they're indicating. The simple rating system on Baseball Reference, which I think basically is just Jazz up run differential, they're second in the American League behind Boston. They're fourth in the majors. Their run differential would indicate that this is a much stronger team than the record indicates. That can be cut a couple ways. It could be cut if Tony La Russa continues to goof around, or bad luck continues to be visited on this team, that maybe it's just not their year. But I think it would indicate that this team is on the verge, maybe at any time, might still be a couple weeks from now, of a pretty big breakout. Your sense of the club, maybe as it stands right now here, a couple weeks or so into the season.
Yeah, I think you hit a lot of the major points, the run differential, kind of the underlying numbers. And I mean, you look at Eloy Jimenez, obviously they knew going into the season he was hurt, but I mean, that didn't happen like a month before the season. It happened like right there. It's a big adjustment. And then you talk about like, okay, maybe Adam Engel can get some of those hit bats, and then he's out, you know, and then it's like Tim Anderson's out, and it's like, all right, as much as I love, you know, Leary, not as much this year, Nick Madrigal, it's like, you don't want them batting leadoff anymore, really. And so, I mean, they've had so many injuries, and, you know, Lance Lynn now, hopefully he doesn't miss too much time. And, you know, I think, like you said, the games they're losing, they're close. They're right there. Should they have a couple more wins? Probably. But at the same time, it's like, these are probably wins that you're going to get later in the season when, you know, Jose Abreu's finally hitting your bullpen. It's starting to turn around here when they're able to allow fewer runs and stuff like that. Those are probably wins you're going to squeak out in the future.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a different topic, and as critical as I've been of the offseason and the fact that there wasn't any extra depth layered into this team, I'm not going to be meat-headed enough to be up in arms about the fact that both Eloy and Adam Engel go down, you know, in the space of, I don't know what it was, a week. It seemed like it was a blink of an eye, and say, well, yes, you should be able to shift on a dime. Now, granted, there may have been a case to be made for still a stronger sub. I mean, the AAA situation is a little rough. And I know part of that's because players have graduated into the majors. But even I'm not going to get up in arms about the fact that, well, geez, why do we have Billy Hamilton, you know, starting? Of course, you can always make a case that says, geez, this offseason could have been better. And those are probably two different topics. So you bring up a good point in that, given the hits this team has taken, really two starters out for pretty much all year, with Timmy playing a little bit here this season. And Engel, obviously a key piece, a guy who probably was going to start more games that didn't, subbing for guys. Those are big hits. And the fact that the team still has an offense to speak of, as much as we want to criticize it, you know, it says something. And when you flip to the pitching, as much as people have, you know, been concerned rightfully, again, it's where the depth strikes, given that maybe they went into the season with three legitimate starters. That's had to look, certainly rotation-wise, it's odd that the rotation might bring us a little less indigestion than the bullpen at the moment. But pitching-wise, the team is maybe a little bit better than we would have thought.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's also a little worry there as well. I mean, Rodon's pitched obviously amazing. He had the no-hitter, obviously, but you know, I don't know what his exact pitch counts were, but they've been up there the last two starts, and one of them was five innings, and that's pretty high leverage innings to get over like 100 pitches or whatever he was. So I don't know. And I mean, I know we talked before the year, we were chatting him, just kind of like, he needs to stay healthy, you know, and if he can stay healthy, he could be one of their best starters. But you know, you have his pitch counts like this early in the season, I don't know how healthy with his injury problems he's had. But yeah, I mean, the starting pitching, other than Giolito's start, I think has been pretty solid for them. I mean, Cease gets 15 outs, but you know, those 15 outs, they give them a chance to win at least. At least they're in the games for the most part.
Yeah, it's interesting. A little debate on the site, I think, during some of this idle time, you know, here, because we've been off a couple days now, and discussing what the strength of your 6-7-8, or let's even say 5-6-7-8, should be in your rotation. And you know, I know every rotation out there, but I don't know, maybe the Dodgers, you know, has weaknesses, has holes, has sometimes even the ace out, you know, injury issues. So I know there's nothing perfect out there, but I don't think it was a lot to ask the White Sox to at least get one other competent veteran, even the equivalent, let's say, of a Rodon, who, you know, by no means was proven, but just to roll the dice to say, hey, maybe Rodon's going to give you half a year, and then this other guy's going to give you half a year. It doesn't have to be Irvin Santana. There are other guys. There probably still are other guys out there that could be filling a role in Schaumburg where it's like, okay, when they need the spot start, it doesn't have to be Kopech for three innings.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. Yeah,
it's
that Kopech is, you shouldn't have to be relying on him at this point. And like, he's so dominant right now, but it's like, but then it's the argument of like, do you want him for like the starting rotation? Or do you want to use him 2 to 3 times a week where he's just completely shutting the opposing team down in the middle of the game? Yeah. And the fact that they're in this situation, like you said, it's the depth and not spending the money there. It's like you add another starter and then all of a sudden, you know, it's like, oh my God, we're not going to have to go to Ronaldo Lopez. You know, it's like, all right, we have someone in Schaumburg.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, you know, idealize Clayton Richard, but they had Clayton Richard in Schaumburg last year. And I mean, Clayton Richard, okay, he's going to throw you some ground balls. You're not going to give anything too spectacular. He's a guy who knows what he's doing. Throwing that, handing the ball to Jonathan Stever, which they were probably on the verge of doing here just this past week. Nothing against Jonathan Stever, because hopefully he can be a rotation piece for the White Sox, you know, sooner than later. But not now. He's not a guy that a pennant aspiring team is necessarily going to run out for any, you know, regular interval. And he probably is the best option. Ronaldo Lopez, he wasn't even in the mix for the 27th guy, which tells you, I don't think it was just bad luck spot in the rotation or you know, on his turn. I think it was that, hey, we don't think he's even ready. And he's really the guy everybody's thinking, all right, he's the guy, roll eyes, is going to have to be, you know, the sub starter. It's such a gap on this team, and it's frightening because you can't have it both ways unless they're going to say at the All-Star break, oh yeah, did we say Kopech was going to maybe have 100 inning limit? I think 200 is going to be one. I mean, unless they're going to change what we think the rules are with these guys, with him and Garrett Crochet, they're already maybe using him as a pace that's going to have him be not a guy that's necessarily going to be there as they have aspired. And as they said before the season, we want him there September and October. if you run him out for 75 innings before the All-Star break, I'm not sure you're going to be able to do that. And I don't have the math in front of me to know if that's the pace. Yeah. Maybe the pace is legit, but they got to find something somewhere, and I don't think they have it. So it's going to be curious to see what they do because, you know, even Bernardo Flores Jr. is gone, who probably was like their eight.
Yeah. It's a rough spot. If Lynn is like, if Lynn's injury was worse, we'd be scratching our heads. What are we doing? I mean, it's not even like Garrett Crochet is pitching super well out of the bullpen. He looks like he needs some minor league innings right now.
Yeah.
Just because his velocity's down a little, how does he work with that? And I mean, nothing against him. I mean, how many players go from, you know, Tennessee making however like five starts, whatever in his career, to pitching in a playoff game and supposed to be the anchor of that bullpen day in game three. So I mean, it's nothing against him. He'll get there, but you know, it's like we keep saying, it's a bad situation they put themselves in. They're one bad entry away from, you know, being really screwed right here.
Yeah. I think I started this out by saying the rotation was a positive.
Yeah. But,
you know, unfortunately right now the rotation does appear to be a pretty good, a pretty strong positive. And I think it was maybe by war measure, I don't know, ERA measures, some measure prior to the Giolito start, I think, you know, early on small sample size was the best in the league. And so still, obviously they're still better than average, and it may continue to be just maybe on that strength of that core three, even though Keuchel hasn't been doing it. You get anything at all from Cease, and granted it's 14 outs right now, but yeah, as you pointed out, 14 outs that are pretty efficient, pretty strong, you know, borderline, you know, dominant, nice little stretches. And Rodon, just a complete bonus under the Christmas tree, you know, so far this season, you know, for a guy that we didn't know what he would be doing. He probably didn't know what he'd be doing when he re-signed. And then, you know, the pen, I don't know if we need to get into that too much because that just invites some hysteria. But obviously they got the arms, they're struggling maybe with some roles and some usage. And that isn't just all on the pen. But I mean, when, I don't know, even Zach Birdie or, you know, down the line, Jace Fry maybe, or Jose Ruiz is your 13th arm in the pen. That's a pen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No worries there, I don't think.
Yeah.
They'll get it together.
What about on the team, Jeremy, who stands out? Not necessarily, it could be a surprise or it could be the guy you're expecting to be really impressive. You know, who's your biggest positive maybe on this team right now in the early going?
I'll go with Adam Eden, I suppose, because I feel like I wasn't thrilled by him, but I also root for the Dodgers. I like the Dodgers as well. So I watched Jock Peterson a lot through his career, and I wasn't thrilled about that possibility either. He's really a platoon guy. Yeah. And I thought Adam Eden, it was a quick signing. It was more maybe they might have bid against themselves a little, but I didn't think it was terrible at the time. I wasn't thrilled by it, but I think he's played really well. I mean, given, you know, he was supposed to be a platoon guy with Adam Engel, and now he's starting every game, hitting in the number two hole basically every game. You know, he's a slow starter historically, and not right now. He's just come out of the gate and having, you know, if these numbers, obviously it's really early and you have 140 more games left, but right now it's putting up like a career season for him right now, hitting with a lot more power than he's used to seeing. And I think, you know, there's some underlying issues. You know, his swing and miss rate is kind of up there, and he's gained a lot of hits outside of the zone. His zone or outside zone contact rate's pretty high there. So it's how much of that kind of continue as the year goes on. But, you know, he's been a good surprise. And when Tim Anderson's out, you know, Aloy's out, Adam Engel's out, you need someone to step up. And Jose Abreu's struggling. And I feel like he stepped up well for them, giving them at least a little offense out there, him and Luis Robert, when those guys were gone.
Yeah, I mean, we're not privy to the discussions or the scouting that the Sox have put out there on Eaton. Obviously, they were so bullish on him that Han, as much as admitted, said, you know, this is, I guess, really pointed toward a left-handed bat. And said, hey, there wasn't anybody else we were going to pursue, so why not sign Adam Eaton? Which seems to the rest of us like, what in the world is he a first day of a winter meeting signing? Mm-hmm. He's not. But if he's your guy, and even if it's okay, a little overpay, fine, what's a couple million dollars? Fine. I mean, if that really was your guy, that seems like a head scratcher. But if that's your guy, maybe based on what you thought he could bring, laughable or not, you know, leadership wise, I mean, clearly this is the best case scenario with Adam Eaton right now. And there's no reason why it can't extend for 140 more games. Sure, he's probably going to crash into the wall and sit for a couple of weeks or something. I'm sure he's going to have some slump action. But if this can project anywhere near what he's doing for the rest of the season, oh my God, I don't think there's much to complain about. Now, I think the folks out there who are clucking and saying, well, you know, what do you got to say about the Adam Eaton signing now? Well, okay, it's been 2 or 3 weeks, so let's just simmer down on that because we're not even in May. But I'm not rooting against him. I don't think anybody is. The biggest head-scratching aspect of that was just how in the world does it seem like it's a stampede to Adam Eaton? You know, we heard, you know, they were goofing with Jock Peterson. Jock Peterson should fire his agent because the White Sox made a better offer and they end up taking. He thought he could hold out for more. Okay, fine. You know, not everything clicks. You know, Zach Wheeler a year before, it's like, hey, you know, gave him the most, you know, offered the most money. Fine. You know, I know some things are always going to fall through. And it wasn't exactly the strongest free agent class out there. And apparently not a real strong trade class either. Doesn't seem like trades get made much anymore. But that was definitely the peculiar aspect of that. And I'm sure you'd agree where it's like, okay, wait, hold on. Yeah. This is your like early December sign. I mean, you go from Yasmani Grandal freaking everybody out, making everybody's head spin, to now a year later, when you're really going for it, it's Adam Eaton. And you got
it. Yeah, it was a day after the Lance Lynn trade too. So it's just like, all right, we made like this win now move, you know, it's like, we're going to do this. And then it's like Adam Eaton and even me, who's like pretty happy with how he's playing and like really excited. And even then I was like, really? Like, this is where we're going now?
It's like, hey, Adam, just between you and me, we're just going to hold this for a week because we just want to like burn all the goodwill on this Lance Lynn thing. And then we'll sort of sneak in and let's not make it a first day announcement. All right. Well, flip side, you know, we've touched on maybe some negatives too, but is there a guy who stands out who's sort of, you know, again, early going, that's maybe disappointed you the most or maybe defied your expectations the most?
For me, it's probably Aaron Bummer, just because his FIP is up there. His WHIP is the worst in the bullpen right now. And the underlying numbers, if you look at like his Baseball Savant page, there's nothing really that stands out like, oh my God, like his sinker needs to like get better like at this or that. You know, it's just kind of, they're just kind of getting hit, and he's allowing a lot of base runners, a lot of walks. Five of the 7 games he's pitched in, the first guy has gotten on. I don't know. I know he was hurt last year, so I don't know if something like carried over or something, but it's like, he's a guy he was dominant 2 years ago, got the extension, you know, dominant when he played last year. So he's a guy who's supposed to be the anchor, your bullpen, go, you know, 7-8 or 8th inning alone, you know, to get to Hendricks. And right now it's like, you can't, I don't know if you can really trust him out there. You know, I guess like Jose Abreu might be a bigger concern because he plays every day, but you know, I just, maybe it's naive, but I feel like he'll turn it around. I feel like this is like every year, even last year, I was like, all right, Jose, you're not hitting with guys in runner's position. Then he wins the MVP. He just turns it on. So I'm not too concerned with Jose Abreu, as naive or foolish as that may be.
Well, it helps too, to know that unlike a bullpen, which is just so interestingly constructed, and one piece triggers all these other problems because everybody's got to step up if your closer gets hurt, for example. The White Sox have 800 first baseman DHs, and so you would think that if Abreu really couldn't snap out of it or hurt himself in a way, maybe couldn't play the field, well, then okay, then you got Andrew Vaughn. Apparently, Yermín Mercedes is a first baseman somehow in some universe. So I could see why, you know, naive or not. I mean, it's like, okay, that's, you know, sort of a – and we can't expect necessarily more than an RBI a game or an RBI a game from Jose Abreu again this season. Aaron Bummer's a guy people are talking about. He was going to – you know, he's your closer if they don't sign Liam Hendricks. And I was probably a guy who thought maybe it'd be a committee thing. I'm not a big closer guy in the first place. But, I mean, certainly he'd be getting those – some more than his share of ninth inning opportunities. And now you think, oh, my God, now – as much as we could criticize adding to a strength by breaking the bank for Liam Hendricks, well, geez, at this point it is like, thank God, because, you know, Jay Spry isn't back. Bummer does seem a little bit lost. And, you know, hopefully it's just shaking some rust off. Basically didn't pitch all last year, and it's probably still adjusting to whatever, getting back into it with the nerve issue. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you don't want him to become your Jace Fry, and then you're dependent on, I don't know, Crochet to figure it out or no big lefty. Again, whether you're a big lefty righty guy or not, you want somebody who throws from the left side, you know, somebody in the bullpen.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's an interesting pick and probably an easy one to overlook, but he's a guy, and in a way, maybe it's gotten a pass because it's been, you know, sexier to talk about, you know, how's Hendricks being used, or, you know, where's our Jimmy Cordero who's going to throw, you know, every game or whatever. And he's maybe gotten a little bit of a pass because there've been other things to flag and worry about. And admittedly, his role is smaller even when he's on. But yeah, that's a piece that if it can't fit in the bullpen, that triggers a lot of other problems. And again, with a minor league pen, with the ready prospects sort of non-existent, I don't know that there's a guy in Charlotte who's going to be like, okay, defensive catcher. Okay, maybe you bring Seve Zavala up, and he's a guy who's going to be a great defensive catcher for you, and won't hit, and you don't expect him to. I can't think of somebody necessarily in the rotation who's just like, okay, we don't have to worry. I guess there are pen arms. I'm not sure from the left side. Cody Medeiros was very impressive this spring, and I thought he deserved a really strong look for that 13th spot. So maybe if Fry's not back as quick as we want, we got a lefty we can bring up and maybe not lose a lot there. But you know, position players, I don't know how much is there just to go, all right, plug it, which is evidenced by the fact we have Billy Hamilton in the mix. And you know, some of these guys that we just are like, oh, yeah, he's available. Hey, Billy, you want to play? Cleveland, who can't hit their way out of a paper bag. Cleveland got rid of me. But
yeah. It's even worse that I was like, you know, Billy Hamilton looks good in these first couple games. You know,
we're hurting without Billy Hamilton.
Yeah.
The nature of podcasts and being a fan is to maybe skew a little negative, but the truth is, listen, this is a 500 team, a tough stretch, got the traditionally toughest road trip out of the way right off the bat, and didn't have to make the long trip, any kind of a red eye situation from like New York or Cleveland, but instead they're going from Arizona to get on that trip. I think it's a big break for the White Sox, even though they played that strange breakneck 8 days in a row to start the season, which didn't give the rotation any sort of break. And teams that are been playing tough. I mean, Seattle's been playing good. Yep. I mean, we caught them.
They just took two from the Dodgers.
Yeah.
They're killing it.
You know, the Angels, I think, better than anybody would have expected to come out of the game. It's not because the White Sox have been terrible. It's because these teams are probably stronger than anybody expected. And the fact that, let's say Seattle can play close to 500, that's way better than anybody would have thought. Of course, we dodged Oakland, and we're going to get them later. Hopefully that might be good timing because they're playing some ball. So, I mean, there's things that you know, this 9-9 is deceptive. There's a lot of good things to point out on this team. And how do you see maybe the end of this month where you see this team? At what point do you see this team breaking above 500? Because they've been playing with it all year.
God, I hope this weekend. every time they get here, I back to 500, I think they're going to, you know, do it because they, you know, sweep the doubleheader against the Red Sox. And you're like, all right, this is going to, you know, they're going to carry that momentum. And then Giolito just gets drilled with all his changeups in the morning game. So, I mean, I don't know. I think they might be hovering around. But the good thing is, I mean, I'm not too worried about how long they hover around. If it's like, all right, if we're like halfway through the year and they're like 41-40, then yeah. But like, I'm not too worried. Because, I mean, everyone's hovering around other than the Dodgers, who are like 14-4, who else has really separated themselves from the pack, especially in the American League? Maybe, you know, I know Oakland's won 11 straight, maybe the Red Sox, you know, they've been playing well, but you know, especially in our division, like the Royals, no one's concerned about the Royals. They're great start for them, but they're gonna cool off, you know. And the good thing is the Twins just keep losing.
Absolutely.
They came back from the COVID pause and, you know, they got shut out in their doubleheader games. They terribly blew the game on Wednesday. So, I mean, your biggest competitor and really the only competitor in my eyes in the division is however many games below you right now and not playing good baseball at all. So I think that's good.
Yeah. People want to look at that as empty, like, oh my God, we should be distancing ourselves. And no, here's the thing. If that's the team you got to compete with. And again, if obviously the White Sox are 500 and the Twins are under, well, then there's some other team, like right now it's the Royals, who are going to say, oh, hey, look, the division, it's just been given to us. But that's really all I'm concerned about. I mean, it's a little silly to say, hey, okay, we're in third, you know, second place, whatever, and they're in last, and okay, we're two games ahead of them. That's a little silly because, yeah, you're going to have to win this division in the playoffs. I don't see many 90-win teams in this division. But, yeah, I want to distance ourselves from that team. You're still going to have to beat them head-to-head. but any distance we can get there, I'm not going to get too uptight about whether it's five games or two games. I just, all we got to be is one game ahead of them at the end.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not real concerned about like all these awesome, what they're going to find. They're going to dig up a closer. You know, they're going to dig up, I don't know what's up with Nelson Cruz. You know, he, I think, got pinch hit for late in some game. I don't know if he's hurt or they just found some defensive thing or something. But, you know, Byron Buxton and Andrelton Simmons, I mean, are guys I think pegged on the short list of most likely to miss significant time this year. That's nothing to shake a stick at. So the fact that even
Josh Donaldson.
He's going to make it rain. Jeremy, he's going to make it rain.
Yeah.
He's still going to make it rain. Yeah, I'm not too concerned about that. I mean, look at the league. Boston, with Boston's pitching. Boston. Please. Yeah. You know, I mean, again, we can't break our arms, pat ourselves on the back, 9-9. You know, there have been winnable games that have been lost. And if you don't get healthy against Texas at home this weekend, yes, this does. You picked it or you hit it. It's got to be now. This is where we get at least a couple games over and hopefully don't dip back down. You got to get healthy off of somebody, just like it was after that first lousy 1-3 start. Okay, you got to go to Seattle and get healthy. They did. You got to get healthy this weekend, even if it's against revenge game Dane Dunning to lead it off. You got to fatten up a little bit against Texas because everybody's got to fatten up against Texas. And the White Sox do that. So, you know, tough to say it's a crucial series toward the end of April, but you have to start stringing some wins, and you got to start putting more distance between you and the Twins, and you got to not, it's cute that the Royals get to be in first place for a while, but
yeah,
let's not let them get froggy and chippy about anything because they
think the psychology of it too, just to get over 500 could help the team. Just to, I mean, how many times have they gotten to 500 and then lost, you know, or lost two games and they had to climb back? I think just the psychology of just like, okay, we have a winning record finally. So now we can, you know, kind of relax a little and we'll start winning here. I think that kind of plays a factor too, possibly.
Yeah, and you get some of these circumstances, especially, well, right from the start of the season where it's like just bad breaks, like or the White Sox were sort of like a bad luck team. You don't want that to set in. And I know some of that's nonsense, but at the same time, hey, I'd much rather be a fan of the team. It's like, we're going to come back and win.
Yeah,
I don't care if we're down six. I mean, you know, Will Allen in the Sharing Sox podcast had a delightful rant about the fact that the White Sox gave up a game in the seventh inning by pitching Yermín Mercedes. They were only down six runs on. And you can make arguments, oh, you got to spare the bullpen. There's a bullpen game coming up on Wednesday. Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's got to be Yermín Mercedes in the seventh inning. And I think his argument, though, he was delightfully biting about it. I mean, I think there is a real pass for the White Sox there where it's like, oh yeah, seventh inning, sure, pitch a position player. I mean,
yeah,
I'm not really sure why that was like number three on the lineup card. Like, okay, we pitched Zach Birdie for a couple of innings, so now who's next? It's Yermín Mercedes. Yeah. I mean, Boston wasn't giving up Franchi Cordero trying to steal a base against Yermín Mercedes. So one team wasn't giving up in that game. So I don't know. Maybe these are all April, you know, sort of like, I mean, this is supposed to be done as pre-training. They played 28 games, but maybe it's still sort of a little bit of that feeling out period, especially some of the injuries and weird weather stuff that, you know, maybe by May 1st, we've got pretty much a settled rotation. Tony knows who he can count on, whether it's on the pitching staff or even among the position players. And, you know, you're sort of rolling with what you have. And hopefully this team gets its feet under it enough between now and the end of the month so that, yeah, maybe from May you don't look back. I mean, that's best case scenario, but I don't think it's unrealistic.
No, definitely not. I mean, yeah, like you said, there's been so many factors, like we've said, that have kind of held them back with injuries and just kind of feeling it out. And, you know, I think there's also a grace period for new managers just to kind of get used to the team, just team get used to them. And, you know, maybe this is it, you know, how I think Tony's trying to figure out how to use some of these guys, you know. And, yeah, some of the decisions are kind of dumb, you know, like why is Liam Hendricks coming back into that Angels game and throwing 40 pitches there? And it's like, you know, and like obviously it didn't affect him really like long term. But, you know, even just in the moment, it's just like, why are we some of these decisions? But, you know, those get smoothed out as the year go on. And you know, the White Sox are a good team. I mean, they are, they're a good baseball team, and they'll good baseball teams figure it out eventually.
beyond a grace period, Tony La Russa came to the White Sox just needing a lot of grace. And he's been lucky.
Yeah.
Though fans have been up in arms. You know, I'm certainly myself included, probably you as well, about what in the world are the White Sox doing with this. He has gotten, by and large, he has gotten that grace. And he's proven himself to whatever degree worthy of it by coming in with some humility and saying, hey, listen, this isn't my team. You know, like, say, a new key player that acquired, you know, this isn't my clubhouse. I'm going to find a way to, especially smart play by him, given that the one strength Ricky Renteria most had was the chemistry, the father figure he played to his players in the clubhouse. Again, maybe that worked against him to some degree, but certainly that was his strength. Tony comes in cold, old. I mean, again, not to be ageist, but, you know, certainly a guy who's been away from the game for a long time. You know, he's proven I'm pleasantly surprised, mildly surprised by what I've seen so far. I'm not going to get too much into the whole, oh, you know, what's he doing with his book? You know, fine. I mean, the guy's won 80 billion games. He's won more than he's lost, I'm pretty sure. You know, I'm going to figure that he's going to know the baseball stuff. I'm really way more concerned with all the BS about whether he's going to drink or whether he's going to like lose his cool on a player, whether he's going to get some weird, like no kneeling nonsense thinking like he's going to just disrupt this team. That does seem the one thing that has seemed to go with was the same concern a little bit with Adam Eaton. It's like, how do you inject this guy in knowing who he is and who he's been?
Yeah.
Now, you know, spoiling the whole drink. And, you know, again, so far so good in both cases. So, you know, keep the fingers crossed that, that there are good things coming in. Hey, listen, Jeremy Kyle's going to be covering for us. Here's the thing, people. You don't know where you're going to find him. You got to check out the recap because he might be writing up the recap of the game. You definitely don't want to check the six-pack because he's probably putting together the poll. Chances are he's doing something almost every day on this site. Who knows what else he's doing? We got minor league stuff coming up. He might dabble in that. There could be some sort of opinion. He might be expanding an opinion he's thrown out on this very podcast into a column. You don't know. That's just it with this guy. You don't know where he's coming at you next. So keep your eyes open. It's Jeremy Carl joining me for podcast number 40 for the first time. Let's do it a bunch more, Jeremy.
Definitely. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks everybody for reading, watching. Well, a few of you watching and listening. Without you guys, we don't have anything. So appreciate y'all being there. Strong community on Southside Sox, welcoming Jeremy to the crew, welcoming some other new faces as well. And we'll get to those very soon as well. Thanks everybody for listening.